Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast. Conversations with media personalities about their lives and journeys, personal and professional. Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. First, a little bit of my story. I'm a 44-year-old father of two daughters. Wiley is 5, Marin is 8. Their mother, my wife Len, passed away a few months ago, November 2020, lost her fight against breast cancer. So as I talk with people like my friends Alex Gervaisi or Nick Valencia from CNN or Jake Warner about their paths, I also talk about mine. As a widowed dad of two girls who just lost their mom, a grieving husband, a man in recovery trying to reconnect with the world with fresh eyes, faith, and perspective, a college journalism professor, a white guy in a world of injustice, a 20-year broadcast media veteran who had his dream job but lost it. A year and a half ago, God gave me a gift, an opportunity to stop, step back, breathe, so I could learn about love, vulnerability, forgiveness, grace, self-care, patience, understanding. I hope you'll join me on this journey as we start the Aaron Bender Podcast with Alex Gervaisi. We worked together at iHeartMedia and did an episode of the Newsbender Podcast way back when. In addition to hosting her own podcast, Alex Tries Her Best, she's also the director of global curation strategy at Universal Music Group, but she does way more than just create playlists.
When I first got hired by UMG back in end of April, like, which is crazy, I thought that's what I was going to be doing. Like, I thought I was just going to be a curator and I was just going to be doing playlists, and that is like the tip of the iceberg. It is.
They got you.
Yeah, but you know what? But that's what is so cool, and what I know I can say about this. Like, first of all, brand new position. So I just moved into this new title beginning of December, which is so awesome, and it is a position that, you know, we're creating. And so that is pretty cool to say that I'm the first ever director of global curation strategy for the number one music company in the world. And, you know, this time last year, being a month into my unemployment, like, wow, like it's been overwhelming and scary and all the things, especially starting a job from home. You know, like, you don't have
You started it about a month into the pandemic.
So it's been wild, but I work with I'm on Mike Begain's team, and Mike is, you know, incredible, and Sam Juneman is just, I can't say enough good things about these people. If you don't know about Mike's background, he was the mind behind Spotify's Today's Top Hits and New Music Friday, which are now massive brands, and was, you know, at the start of Spotify, which is really cool. So, and then Sam has 10 years under her belt at UMG and is just one of the most brilliant people I've ever worked with. And so it's equally as intimidating and scary as it is and very inspiring. It's been pretty great.
Let's introduce the people to what we're enjoying tonight, beverage-wise. What do you have there?
I have gotten pretty good at making myself old fashions. So I'm drinking a bourbon old fashioned with a bottle. I'm using straight edge whiskey bourbon, and it is delicious. And this is also my winter cocktail. My choice liquor in the winter months.
What is your summer cocktail?
Anything with mezcal or tequila.
Okay. So. All right. Done.
How about you? What are you drinking over there?
I am drinking a heavy, heavy pour of Lambrusco.
Yeah, you are.
Because we had talked about this would be wine night, and you texted me about 20 minutes beforehand. I don't have any wine. I don't know how it happened. I've been with wine this entire pandemic. How about bourbon on the rocks? I'm like, of course, yeah. You do what you want.
Yeah.
And so, we can get into this later in the podcast, but gender norms be damned.
Yes.
I've got the sweet dessert wine You've got the old fashioned.
I didn't even think of that.
I think we're setting the tone for this conversation.
And I love this for us. You know, it's funny. I actually opened up a bottle of Lambrusco the other night, not realizing that it was just that. And I was so like, and I opened it and it just went sprayed everywhere.
Oh no. Oh no.
I was like, great. So Alex, this is why we read labels before you open things.
And this was one of my wife's favorites. So I think as we start a new chapter here in the podcast realm, it's only fitting. We toast. We toast to Len right here.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Awesome.
So the title, Director of Global Curation Strategy. Let's break that down here. There are people who work their entire lives and never have director in front of their name. There are people who work their entire lives and never have global in their title. Alex is like, F it, I'll have both. How does it feel to be in charge of something? Yes, you have bosses. Yes, you work for people.
Yep.
But you are in charge of something.
It feels equally as, again, I keep saying this, it feels so empowering, but it feels so scary too. And I just think, you know, I have just been so thankful over the last 10 months that I have such an incredible team around me. Like, Aaron, I can't begin to explain to you like how empathetic, compassionate, kind, patient my team is. Like, I feel like I hit the jackpot with just like the best team ever. And so, you know, I've realized over the last few years, and it's something I actually reflected a lot today on, is it's really hard for me to ask for help. And when you're creating a position and it's a global position, you're going to have to ask for a lot of help. And which is all I've been doing. So I, you know, it was funny, like even today, I got on the phone about an hour ago with someone from our, you know, global marketing team. And I was just trying to build out a better system for all of us to get on the same page. And it was interesting because I was kind of, this goes back to your question, but like it was interesting because as I was talking to her and processing some things out loud, I realized like so many of the things that I had been feeling are shared feelings. But it's what's interesting about that is because we're all not in the office together and we're all very isolated and we're really only like emailing each other back and forth and hopping in and out of Zooms, like you kind of miss out on that reminder that, you know, oh, the thing that I felt like I was failing at is actually a thing that everybody else is feeling currently, you know?
Yeah.
And so I have just, you know, that was even just like a small, like silver lining of just today where, you know, I think with everything going on in the world and being at the epicenter of like the pandemic, which is Los Angeles, and trying to process like all of these things while sending emails and trying to be efficient at your job. Like it was this little silver lining of, man, people are great. And, you know, I just felt so thankful that like, you know, I was hopping off the phone and she's like, hey girl, just another reminder, like anything you need, like we, like, she was like, I just am so happy to help, like anything. And it's just like attitudes like that, which are why I have this position. Like, you know, I don't ever think it's like anything that I'm doing. It's just like, what an incredible team of people that are just like constantly around me. And I've really just lucked out in that sense. And, you know, even when I was unemployed, like the amount of people that championed me to, you know, send my resume to UMG, even though it was funny, I looked at the job listing and I had no idea like what, like no one did, because it didn't exist. And at the time it was just like pop curator. And I was like, how is a curator at a label? Like, this doesn't make any sense. And, and so we've gone on to do some pretty, pretty cool things. And it's been a great ride so far, but yeah, I mean, like, I know, It sounds like a fancy title, but it's just like, I would not have it if it wasn't for so many people just being so gracious and willing to help and just so incredible. So it's been, man, it's been a ride. Like, it's just been a year.
Now, obviously during the pandemic, it's difficult to call this an office job, but this is an office job. When was the last time you had a classic 9-to-5?
I haven't.
Exactly. So that's my next question. How daunting is it? Let's forget the pandemic. Yeah. How daunting is it to clock in and out at what would be considered normal business hours?
You know, it's that's so interesting that you ask that, because it's not even something I've really thought of. Because again, like, I've been working from home. So it's like, it doesn't even feel real, I guess, in that sense. If and when we go back to the office, and who knows what that will even look like, I think then it's going to probably set in a bit. But you're right. Like, I've never had a 9-to-5. I think the closest thing that I probably had was like doing middays. And it's like, yeah, I would show up to the studio, you know, whether it was in LA or Austin or Virginia Beach. And I would show up at, you know, 8, 9 o'clock, and then especially doing middays, like, I leave by 5. So I guess in that sense it was kind of a 9-to-5, but like, I'm on air talking to people for 4 or 5 of those hours. Like, it's not me, you know, coordinating or, you know, planning all these things and answering emails. And so it's kind of a trip, but at least I'm still in the music industry, because like,
right,
that's where you don't think about it, because it's stuff that I love and I enjoy. So it's not like I just did this massive career pivot into a completely different industry. Like, what has been, I think, the coolest thing, Aaron, is there was like, when I was, you know, getting warmed up to this new position that I'm in now, I had this really cool moment with, you know, Mike and Sam. And I've had many of these moments where I've had this aha moment of, oh, basically what you're asking me to do is what I just did for 4 years at KISS. It's just looking different. And so it's been really kind of cool to take little bits and pieces of things I picked up at KISS FM, at iHeartRadio. And even though it's not radio, it's, you know, very different, how they've transferred and kind of making that connection has been really awesome. And I think that's what makes the whole going to a 9-to-5 a little less shocking, because it's a lot of the same things I've been doing. It just looks a whole lot different.
So given that, and obviously with the pandemic, we all, I think, thought, let's go back to summer. Oh, by the time New Year's hits, we're going to be able to go back to work. After winter break, we'll go back to work. Mm-hmm. Oh, but then there's Halloween surge. Then there's Thanksgiving surge and Christmas surge, New Year's surge, all that kind of surge, protest surge. And
yep.
Inauguration surge. So
it goes on and on.
When do you think, what kind of talk has there been for you guys to actually go into the office? And for you, I'm not going to say go back to the office, because you've never been.
I know. It's weird. I actually had this moment with some of my coworkers like a couple months ago, where they were talking about, oh, you know, like when you go on the fourth floor and there's that like vending machine. I was like, I had this full moment where I went, guys, I forgot that you all have worked together in the same building. Like, yeah. I had this moment. But UMG has been so good at keeping us in the loop. And quite frankly, I just think really great overall when it comes to the pandemic, when it comes to activism, like everything. They've been so communicative. And I just got another email like a couple hours ago, just like talking about mental health and here are resources and let's talk, you know, whatever. But they told us about, I want to say it was in September, they extended a work from home through July. And so that was thinking how far ahead. Another great thing that they've done though, is this entire year, and I think it's been extended indefinitely, is give us half days on Fridays. So summer Fridays are just all year round and we love to see it. So.
Oh, wow. Yes. Yeah. Cheers to that. Right.
Cheers to that.
That is something to raise our drinks to here.
I'm hoping that they go to a 4-day work week, and I'm just going to keep putting that out in the universe and just really hope that they go, you know,
speak it into existence.
Speaking it into existence. They're like, you know what? It's been a rough year and a half for everybody. We're going to a 4-day work week. Like, it's fine.
If anybody wants to track down our previous conversation, it is online. It's, you know, Alex Gervaisi Tries Her Best is the episode of the Newsbender. And of course, you have your podcast, Alex Tries Her Best. How is that going?
You know, we actually just yesterday, oh God, was it yesterday? What is time? I think it was on Sunday. I don't know, Aaron. We had taken like a little break, I think, especially kind of just trying to figure out, you know, balancing just like the new position. And then things just got like really crazy for my Erica, my friend and producer. Mm-hmm. And so like we took like a little break. I think the last episode had like dropped maybe in September. And then we just recorded one the other day and I have not sent her the audio yet because I'm the worst, but it should be up within the next week. And you know, it's funny and this is fitting, you know, normally obviously we take like very serious topics and, you know, we have guests on, and this was just me and Erica like shooting the shit for an hour and 15 minutes with alcohol. And
you need that.
I came in already like kind of buzzed. So she was, I like honestly probably should listen back to that audio and make sure I didn't embarrass myself.
Don't,
did I?
Don't. That's why you have a producer. Let her do it.
I was
because you will be listening with Alex filters, with Alex ears. You don't need that. Uh-huh. But the producer, ask her to do it.
Oh. I was going into my dating life. I was just like, and like, I was thinking afterwards, I was like, did I maybe, because I'm always very good at making sure I don't cross any lines. I'm a big believer. And I think it's so interesting because we like live in this world, excuse me, with just like TikTok and like social media where everyone just like, especially on TikTok, and Gen Z just doesn't have a filter where they just right. like do what yeah. we all did with Xanga, which was, you know, talk about everyone and their boyfriend and ex-boyfriend and girlfriend, and they use names. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like this is terrifying.
It's intense. Yeah.
It's so intense. But, you know, I think like one of the benefits of being in radio for 10 years and being like a quote unquote public figure, whatever that means, is like you've kind of find the balance between being open and disclosing some things while also maintaining like a level of privacy as well, and like just wanting to be respectful of other people, of your life, like so you know, anyways, alcohol was in the mix, so I really hope I did a great job of that. I think I did, but
you brought
still.
Up dating life, but it's pandemic. Is there a dating life?
There is. You know, it was so interesting because like right before the pandemic, ironically, after I lost my job, which is interesting because like part of me was like realizing like, okay, dating and being unemployed, that's scary for me because I had put so much weight on my job for so long and had been so like tightly wound into my identity. And what was ironic was like 2019 was a lot of me trying to unravel that. And then I lost my job and I was like, okay, girl, like time to put it to the test, like go out there, get out there. And
what is my identity? Oh shit. I've got to figure it out.
Oh no. So I went on like a bunch of dates at the beginning of 2020 and, you know, without a job, and they actually were pretty enjoyable. And I was like, okay, get in the hang of this. And like, it was kind of cool that like, you know, the guys I had been, you know, going on dates with, even if they were one-offs, like no one at least was saying like they were in, you know, put off by that. Like everyone was like, okay, you know,
I wanted to date a radio DJ, not a former radio DJ. Yeah. So you're like, I'm sorry.
You gotta go and you're paying.
No second date. Sorry.
Nope. But so then the pandemic hit like right when I was getting into the swing of things and really enjoying dating, like really hit my stride. Like it was fun. And I think what I know about me is I have this outgoing personality, and if it's a bad date, it will be a good story. And, you know, I have had to force conversation with, you know, in our job, like so many people, like we interview people, you know, for a living. And so it's like, it kind of took all this pressure off and I just started having fun with it. And then the pandemic hit and that really put a damper on things. But back in August, I decided to, you know, kind of give maybe pandemic dating a try. Ended up seeing this guy for a few months.
Oh wow, okay, yeah,
and so it's interesting because like one of two things happens, and I don't think either of these things happened in our case, but it's been something that's an interesting topic when you talk about dating within a pandemic, especially in Los Angeles, right? Either you're forced to take things extremely slow or you're forced to speed them up real fast, because it's like, are you in my bubble or not? Like, it's like one of those things, like, where normally you can, like, probably without guilt, like, see multiple people or go on a bunch of dates, but like, you're like texting these people and these guys and you're like, did you get a COVID test? Are you comfortable with meeting here with masks on? Okay.
Right.
Like, you know, and so that's been really interesting to navigate. So yeah, I went out with this, this one guy had been asking me out for like a month. Like, and when I got back from New York in September, we met up at Echo Park Lake, and did like, I brought cocktails, like, you know, did like a social distance type of a situation, but we both got tested, you know, beforehand. And these are the types of questions you have to ask when you're dating in a pandemic.
And there we go.
Yeah. And so that didn't work out, which was, you know, kind of a bummer, but like, again, was a really good experience. And me forever, the reframer was like, okay, but kind of rad. Like, I got to date someone in a pandemic, like, and you know, that was really fun. And I learned a lot about myself, and that, you know, I can't ask for anything else. So now I'm, you know, just dating again, and same thing. Like, also another thing that's been really interesting is there have been a few times where I've recently have texted guys and been like, hey, I believe in being transparent. And I have to tell you, like, today's not good. And, you know, I'm just not in the best headspace. Like, and I don't want to flake on you, but I just want to be honest. Is it okay if we reschedule? And I've done that like maybe two or three times, like including like a couple days ago. And I think what the other side of what this pandemic has done is, at least in my experience, kind of given some grace, like where, you know, guy, like the guys that I've communicated this to have been like, oh my gosh, first of all, thank you for being so honest with me. And thanks for communicating that with me, and not a problem at all, because everyone gets it. Like, we're all so fatigued, and like, for me to just basically communicate, I'm not up for doing small talk today, and you're not going to get the best version of me, and that be accepted and be like, totally fine. Let's circle back in like a couple of days, you know, rest up, is pretty cool. And so I think that there are some positives that have come out of dating in a pandemic, which is like, you're kind of, like I said, you can kind of be forced to take it a little bit slow. You kind of see off the bat, and Dr. Wendy touched on this. You can kind of see like, okay, like, do you believe in science? Like, are you like a good person? Like, are you going to respect?
Do you believe in science?
Yeah. Like, are you wearing a mask out here in these streets? Like, I need to know.
Right.
So yeah, I think that's been something where, like, now that I'm again, like, you know, that last thing didn't work out, and so now I'm just like dating again, it has been like a kind of enjoyable thing. And it's, you know, you got to take the wins where you can, right?
Let's talk about the growth here, because, you know, the pandemic, like you said, has forced a lot of us to communicate differently, to interact differently. So let's go back, say, 5 years.
Mm.
Alex goes on 50 dates in a year. Okay, let's just throw that number out there.
She
nice round
never.
Number. 30 dates in a year. Let's just throw that out there. How many of those dates did you go on because you felt obligated to? You didn't want to cancel. You didn't want to be honest with that person and let them know, hey, I'm not in the right headspace. So you forced yourself to go, which isn't good for anybody. But here we are, 2020, 2021, and you are allowing yourself to be honest with yourself and with somebody else.
Yeah, there is growth there. And I think, you know, it's interesting. And I think it's important noting that anytime I have really gone on a date, I haven't usually regretted it, even if I've been like, oh, I don't want to do this. Like, actually, the guy I, you know, was seeing for a few months, you know, at the end of last year, that was one of those things where I almost canceled on him last minute. Like, I almost said, I can't. Ruth Bader Ginsburg literally had died, like, that day. And I was just, like, as I'm getting ready for this date, and I was like, can I curse on this podcast, by the way?
Yes, please.
Okay, I was like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. And you know what? That's another thing. I texted him, and again, back to the growth and the transparency, where I don't think I would have done this, you know, I don't think I would have done this a year ago. Was I texted him and I said, hey, I just want to be transparent. I don't know if you saw the news, but RBG died and I am not in the best of moods. So if my energy is like a little off, it's not you. I just like want to be upfront about that, but I'm looking forward to meeting you. Like, and he was just like, oh my gosh, I did see the news. Like, thank you. That's so nice. So I think again, like, you're right. Like, probably definitely not a year ago, 5 years ago, like, I wasn't, you know, I was going on dates and still trying to force myself to go on dates, but there was like a lack of transparency still. And I think it has been, I think it's a mixture of getting older. And also this pandemic is like, what do I have to lose? Like, what do I have to lose? Like, I think like, especially what I'm looking for in a relationship is someone who's good at communicating, someone who can be transparent, someone who can state what their boundaries are and say, hey, like in a clear way of just putting it out there and saying, you know, I'm just not in the mental space right now. Is that okay? And I have nothing to lose. And if that doesn't go over well, then you're probably not the right person for me if you don't have the emotional capacity or intelligence to navigate something like that. And so,
right. And not to say that you're playing a game there, but it's a, no, it's a nice test. It is a
it
nice
kind of
test.
Is. Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. I thought about that yesterday when I had sent that text to, cause I was supposed to go on a date last night. Like, we were just going to go do a cocktail to go. And I was just like, do you feel comfortable keeping masks on? He's like, yes. And I was like, great time. Perfect. But yeah, it was a heavy weekend. It's a heavy time for everybody. And I just allowed myself that grace to be like, you know what, Alex, it's okay if you're going to reschedule it. Like, I'm sure you'd have fun with this guy, even if you went, but maybe, you know, you need to just like be with people who you don't have to have a wall up with, like, yeah, go yeah, see your friends. So there is some growth, and I'm always looking for growth. You know,
you've touched on mental health quite a few times, and that was a big part of our previous conversation. Considering what this pandemic has done to all of us, putting mental health front and center, would 5 years ago, Alex, been able to navigate things that have gone down in the last year?
I mean, I've been in therapy for about 6 years now, maybe five years, but I was definitely like, you know, I've been on and off in therapy my whole life, but like as an adult, like I would have been still like very new, and I don't know how I would be coping with this, you know, 5 years ago. I know I would be in therapy, so that's good. But I think I wouldn't have been able to probably articulate things that I can articulate now. And I think a lot of that is, you know, 5 years ago, I wasn't really in a, like a safe space to do that either. You know, like the fact that I, you know, have encouraged people on my team to take mental health days. I've been encouraged to take a mental health day. The fact that I can say candidly, and I have people on my team that can say candidly, I'm not doing great right now, you know, is I think huge and a big part of that. But that is something that had to also be learned and is hard, because if you don't have people around you, whether it is in your social circles or your work circles, that have a lot of empathy, like how do you even communicate that? Like you can, but there are people that might not have the capacity to understand that either. And so again, kind of like back to like, I'm really thankful for the job I have now, because I have been able to say that. At the end of the day, I have a job to do. Like, you know, I have to get this done, you know? But, you know, it's like, I've told my team, like, listen, if you don't feel like jumping on a Zoom meeting and you would rather take it from your phone and go on a walk, or if you're just like, no, thank you, I can't do it today, tell me, because I'm the last person that's going to hold that against you. It is like, so I think that there is a lot there in the last 5 years, there has been a lot of growth there too, with the ability, again, back to communication. Like, you have to be able to communicate that. And then also, what are your coping mechanisms? Like, I had to, and I've talked about this, you know, on social media, because I do believe in being transparent, especially when it comes to mental health. Although, again, like, I don't technically owe anybody anything, but I am someone that talks a lot about it on my platform. Like, I have a month into Prozac, and this is the first time I've been on an antidepressant. And, you know, I thought today, I was just like, okay, I love that I was like never on medication a day in my life. And now it was like, my psychiatrist was like, here's Prozac and also here's a sleep aid. And I'm just like, okay, like, I now have one of those like pill drawer things. And yes. I'm just like, oh, we're here now.
Sunday,
cool.
Monday,
yes. I literally have Tuesday. It Sunday AM, Sunday PM.
That's great.
Then I'm just like, I have subscribed to like an edible, like subscription box. So I was just like, yeah, no, I got Prozac.
You're going all in.
Oh, we're going all in. I was like, Prozac, also this sleep aid that my psychiatrist gave me, and also an edible. And so, will that help me sleep through the night? Perfect. Okay, great. So we'll see how it goes.
That's great. So you mentioned obviously your growth, but getting back to the job and the culture of leadership has routinely been, you're not going to see my flaws, you're only going to see my strengths, and that's how I'm going to lead. And here you are in your first position as a leader, as a director of global
curation
strategy.
Strategy.
I almost flipped the strategy and curation. It didn't make sense in my head.
Yeah.
But here you are now as a leader, at a time when the culture of leadership has evolved.
Yeah.
You know, I keep going back to 5 years ago, Alex, and because there is so much growth.
Yeah.
Whereas a few years ago, I think there was this mindset that I cannot be honest with my team, because if I am about my faults and my weaknesses and my shortcomings, or like you said, I'm just having a day, then that's going to let my team down, and that I can't let my team see that. Whereas now there's an emphasis on letting your team see everything, because then that lets them know that it's okay for them to feel that way too.
Yeah. And I think like that's something that I'm trying to like even struggle to like find a balance with too. Cause like you don't want to be like, and this is my own, like I always talk about how I have like a ton of imposter syndrome as well. But like, you know, I think it's so healthy to be able to say, or at least act like you don't have it all figured out. Now the balance is, you have to also learn how to find the answers, right? Like,
yeah.
And be resourceful and all those things. But yeah, especially like, you know, that is something that was never a part of the work culture of, you know, the first 10 years of my career. And so it was really, really refreshing and really shocking to move into this new department, brand new department. You know, the whole department is new. You know,
wow.
It's not just
wow.
me. So we're all new. And a lot of us are coming from outside of UMG, from various places. You know, like Sam has been there for 10 years. So she has 10 years under her belt. But like, you know, there's like jargon I'm learning. There is, you know, and so what has been really cool is, again, that's also been like a tone that has been set as well. And like, I try to set that. But thankfully, you know, I have these brilliant minds around me that also aren't afraid to be like, oh my God, I had no idea what that person meant. What they said that I had to Google it, or, you know, I just learned, you know, this or whatever. It's like, that should be more of that, because here's the thing. I think it's such, you do yourself and everyone around you a disservice when you act like you have everything together, because, and I think like there's been this spirit of holding everything so closely to your chest because you're so paranoid that you're going to lose your job, which, you know, there are a lot of companies that are constantly cutting people and they create that environment. So everyone's constantly on edge and everyone is so paranoid that they're going to be the next to go. And it creates right. this very toxic, negative workplace, even if you work with great people, like even if you work with fantastic people.
Yep.
If everyone is so insecure and self-conscious about losing their job, of course no one is going to be the first one to be like, hey, I don't know how to do this, or I'm unfamiliar with this, or what do you mean when you say that? Like, I don't understand. Like, no one's going to do that. But guess what? How are you going to be the best at your job if you can't do that? Like, how are you going to be a collectively strong unit if you can't be vulnerable with the people around you? You can't. So then yeah. you lose. Like, everyone loses, and then the workplace just doubles down on being toxic and not great and not innovative and all these things, because everyone's just terrified to speak up.
Yeah. And, you know, I going back to, you mentioned right at the beginning of our chat here, the idea of asking for help. And the one of the things that my wife, who after she passed, my instinct was to go it alone, to just power through, never give myself a break, never ask for help, because that's just how I had been doing things for so long, keeping things just so close. And she spent months and months and months, knowing that she was going to die soon. She spent months basically retraining me to be okay asking for help, to be okay at not being okay. And I spent years, decades, just hiding things from so many people because I didn't want this person to know all the flaws, because this person would disrespect me. That was my fear. That yeah. this person would lose all respect for me if they knew how awful I was at X, Y, and Z. And I remember in my first few years in radio, I would strive for perfection and get so upset at the tiniest of mistakes because it made me feel like just a complete failure.
Yep.
At the tiniest of mistakes.
Yep.
And, you know, thankfully I've evolved from that. I would like to think so. To the point where after she passed and people were offering help, I had to take a beat, take a breath, and say, yes, I will accept your help. We need your help. We would like that. Yes. You want to make something, you know, you want to make some lasagna, neighbor? That's fine. By all means, we'll take some lasagna. And I would, if this had happened 2 years ago, I would have been like, no, we're good. We're good. We're fine. And then I would have just completely broken and collapsed and not known why.
Yeah.
Not known why. Yeah. But the pandemic forced that. Her cancer forced that. My not being in radio forced that. I mean, all of those things came together, and it really, I mean, we're getting a little bit off topic, but it's a podcast. It's my podcast. I guess all topics are on topic.
Yes. Say it louder for the people in the back.
So the idea that everything happens for a reason. God freed up my life to be able to give my life to my wife and my daughters at their time of need. I would not have been able to take care of my wife the way I did last year if I had been carrying on my life the way I had been prior to that, you know. And you know, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, but I think what's so interesting, I think this also speaks to who you are, is what you just said was, oh, this happened to me. It freed up my time to serve others, which I think is beautiful. But it also in that as well, people have been able to pour into you, and also you've been able to pour into yourself. Like, I think that there, again, when you talk about like the capacity, and first of all, I remember that's what struck me when we were texting, you know, back in November about all of this. And, you know, you said that, you said, I actually will take you up. Like, if I need anything, I will ask you. Like, yeah. And I think that, again, that's like a really, that is a difficult thing to do. And I talk a lot about, like, I talk a lot about like the trajectory of our lives and grief specifically. And whether you are grieving the loss of a loved one, a job, anything, you know, like I kind of like have zoomed out on life and looking at like mountaintops and valleys and like peaks and valleys. And when you're in the valleys and like you're in the trenches, and it is just like the lowest point of your life, you have this perspective of like, and we've talked about this, like sitting in grief and like sitting in sadness, even though it's so uncomfortable, cause you just like, don't ever want to do that. Like, why would anybody would want to do that?
Right.
But like being able to sit in that with the perspective of knowing like, this pain is real. But this level of pain or this is not going to be forever. And I know that the peak will come. I know that the mountaintop will come. And that has been the trajectory of my life. That's been the trajectory of everyone's life. And there will be joy. Like, there will be joy again, even if there's not joy right now. And then when you get to that mountaintop and you get to that peak, you also have this perspective of wanting to relish in that longer as well, because you know that's also temporary. Like, it's kind of like this yin and yang, right? Like, but like you have, I think that there in what has struck me so much about you as you've been grieving something so heavy is being vulnerable about that, asking for help, but also I've seen in you like the ability to find joy and gratitude, because I think you have been sitting in the pain. And you've been doing it in a healthy way where the other things aren't missed on you. Like when you talk about your daughters, or you're able to talk about the things that your wife has taught you, or these lessons, or you just talk to me about like, you know, people bringing over lasagna, and like you have this ability to still zoom out and say, I'm feeling so much gratitude and there's joy in those things. Right. And so I think that's something I want to highlight about you. And sorry, I just, it was somewhat something I want to highlight about you, because I think that's very important. So well, I wanted to say that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And that's another thing is also the, like never getting used to people saying, you know, I'm sorry for your loss or my condolences. And just a simple thank you, you know, like just now I've never been one to accept compliments like all that well. And again, over the last, you know, year plus, the idea of just a simple thanks, you know, it goes a long way. You don't have to deflect it. You don't have to dismiss it. You know, and you just sit in it and say, you know what, thank you. That it means a lot that you say that. And it really does. And, you know, I mean, there's so many ways we can go with this. The idea of, you know, I was never much into religion. I was raised Catholic, but never baptized. My grandfather would take me to Catholic church, and I just knew when to stand, sit, and that I couldn't go up for communion. You know, that was the extent of my Catholic upbringing. And then just, you know, my wife's Catholic, our daughters are baptized Catholic, her whole family, she's from the Philippines, so it kind of makes sense. But it took losing my job and having life completely fall apart for me to realize, and it took several months after that for me to realize that God has a plan And you just kind of have to sit in that plan and let it take shape. Do what you can on your part. You don't just, you know, whatever it was, wait on an island, wait for it to flood, and forget all the boats that he keeps sending your way. You can't do that. But at the same time, you don't have to force it. You just give him what you've got, and he'll take care of the rest.
Yeah. I think that
to a large degree. Yeah.
To a large degree. And yes. I think that that is something, I've reflected a lot on, and I know that's different. There's different perspectives there.
You could say God, you could say a higher power.
I don't even mean with that. Like, I just mean with, like, again, like whatever anyone is struggling with or going through. And it's like, you know, it's funny, like I call my poppy once a week and who's 88. And, you know, I told him about, you know, even just like this job. And that was like the first thing he pointed out. He's like, well, you know, Alex, like I was over here trusting the Lord. And I was just like, yes, I was too poppy. But I was getting a little nervous there, but you know, I think again, like that's actually a kind of, it's funny. The whole thing about gratitude, I don't know if you know this about me, but like I am, you know, I am a practicing Christian, the running joke with my pastors, and I deserve it, is I only show up for holidays and when I'm preaching. So I love my, you know, I ran into my pastor Corey, who's a dear friend, at a like backyard social distance hanging. I hadn't seen him since like in person since the beginning of the pandemic. And I was like, you know, Corey, I know, I love that I can say this to you as my pastor. I've been taking a bit of a church cleanse and I didn't mean to, but I just, he's like, no, I get it. I love that for you. So I have a very socially liberal and just liberal in general, like deconstructionist church I go to. But like when I did preach one time, like a year ago, it was on gratitude and it was on sitting in pain and like all of those themes. And, you know, it was me and my friend Brittany, we tag teamed it. But like, I think that there is like the point of, I wish I could remember the passage that we were diving into. There is, I think, something to be said. What I have noticed, and you talk about growth or where I was 5 years ago. I mean, I think what I realized is when I was able to sit in pain, no matter what that pain was, in a healthy way and just like experience that, I think that does deepen your emotional well, where gratitude, actually, and joy can spring out at the same time. And I think that's what I've seen. And I think that's what a lot of people have seen. Actually, I think, could be wrong, I think like Brene Brown actually talks about this. But I do think that that's what happens. And like, again, like that's kind of what I've seen with you. And it doesn't mean it's an easy thing, you know, like,
oh my God, no.
Queen of wanting to just not ever. I'm like, give me every social thing I can do, which let me tell you something, has made this pandemic miserable. It has made me sit in some uncomfortable feelings I don't want to sit in. And I'm just like, but I would rather be at a bar. It's true.
I do love, by the way, that you're like, you know, I saw him at this backyard barbecue. Socially distanced, by the way. Yes. Everything needs to be qualified.
Yes, I know. It's kind of, I just want to be like, can you guys just like trust me? But I get it. Like, I feel like I don't want to be setting like a bad example.
Yeah.
The mask on the whole time, but still.
Yeah. I mean, I think back to the days and weeks after she passed, and it was mid-November when she passed away. The instinct was to try to be busy, try to do, you know, my usual of too many things and not do any of them right.
Yep.
Because I'm trying to do too many things and I'm too distracted. I forced myself to do, and I had kind of her voice in mind. I forced myself to do only one or two things a day, just period. Now, that could have been, you know, calling her bank. It could have been calling the mortuary. And I held to that for the most part up until early in January. And I don't know what it was. Maybe just kind of the new year. And I'm like, okay, let's start this new year off right. And I did way too much. I had like a 5 or 6 day stretch of no rest and just all in my feels and, you know, arranging closets and organizing this and going through her stuff and going on a hike. And it was just too much. And I broke. I broke. I couldn't move my head. I couldn't turn my head to the right for a week. And I broke. And it was then that I realized how important it was to just stop and to just listen to yourself and listen to your body and listen to your mind. And you don't have to do these things the same way you've been doing things. That's why you broke to begin with.
Yep.
Like, forget this month. That's why I broke years and years and years ago, over and over and over and over and over again. Because
yep.
I just kept figuring, oh, I can do that. I can do that. It's fine. I'm not going to break. No, you put too much stress on anything and it's going to break.
And also, I thought this was interesting, like I follow like a lot of just like therapy accounts on Instagram, but like we live in this capitalist society where there's two ways that people cope with stress and grief and everything, overperforming and underperforming, right? But one is celebrated by our jobs, by the people around us, and that is the overperformers. Like the people who, when they get hit with stress, the pandemic, personal things, their first response is, I'm going to dive myself into work. I'm not going to cope with any of this, and I'm going to get everything done, and I'm going to work for 16 hours and whatever.
Yep.
And then there are people who can't function. They don't want to do anything because they're depressed and all this stuff. But unfortunately, that is not celebrated by our society. Right. And so right. It's like, it really kind of puts you in this position where it's like, yeah, like, well, you can overperform, but you're probably going to hit that wall just like you had. And like, where's the happy medium? Like, how do you, you know? And so it sounds like, I really love that you said, like, I gave myself this challenge of like, I'm just going to do one or two things off this list.
Yep.
And that's going to be that. And guess what? You know what? Here's another part of this. It would be enough if you were experiencing this without a global pandemic,
mm-hmm.
without yep. An attempted coup, without the political bullshit that we've been dealing with for so long. Like, it would be enough on its own. And then you put everything else. And I have had this moment every day where I have gone, how are any of us functioning? How are any of us functioning? Yeah. And like, you know, the fact that you've been able to just, you get out of bed, you're there for your daughters, you've been able to be vulnerable and show like emotion, and sitting in pain and being sad actually isn't a weakness, which because of, you know, what so many men have been taught, like that is something that it's reason why so many of us have daddy issues. So, you know, look at, you're already winning there.
Oh my gosh. You talk about, you know, I have cried with my daughters more often than I thought I ever would.
Yeah.
You know, and they, and in turn, they know it's okay to cry with me.
Yeah. You're safe for them.
I mean, just the other night, Marin, my 8-year-old, just started crying. And I asked her what's up, and she told me readily, just immediately told me. And then we just sat in that moment.
Yeah.
We just sat in that moment. And again, a year ago, 2 years ago, 20 years ago, that would not have happened. Not with this guy. Mm-mm.
No. I think like I tend to wonder, like, you know, in 20 years, like, you know, like how much more advanced your daughters are going to be compared to like the rest of us who have had to be in like therapy for 7 years to try to figure out like, you know, being vulnerable with emotions and all these things. But like, you know, I think again, like, and that's another thing. I've thought so much about kids, you know, during, you know, a pandemic, or just how kids don't know how to express themselves. They don't know what anxiety is, you know, like, and how like adults have enough of a hard time as is processing heavy emotions. You know, it's like everyone gets frustrated with kids, and I'm not a parent yet. Like, I would love to be one day. I hope to be one day, but like, it is, you know, it's, you know, you look at kids having outbursts and, you know, all of these things. It's like, okay, they don't know how to even process what's happening, all these extreme emotions that they're trying to process. Like, they have, so that's when they have the outburst. That's when they have this. And it's like, you know, they're going through all this stuff that the adults are going through too, you know? And it's, it is a, again, I can't say it enough. Like, I think, although I sometimes have to stop myself and say, Alex, you don't always have to find the reframe. Sometimes things can just be shitty, that you don't always have to look for the silver lining. Like, maybe give it a rest. But again, I think that that is, that's a beautiful thing that has risen, you know. And so,
is it a requirement for anybody from anywhere near Philadelphia mention silver lining in every podcast there is?
Oh my God.
Is that?
I didn't even put that together.
I think it's a requirement, right? I mean, it might be. It's got to be.
God, listen, we can talk about sports. If you want to pivot, if that's, first of all, love when you talk to someone on radio, they know how to absolutely have that. You found it. Congratulations. Like, if you want to talk about, if you want to talk about Doug Peterson, listen, we could be here for another 45 minutes. So I'm kidding.
No, did he get fired? I can't,
yes.
I haven't checked. I haven't, yes. I heard a little bit about it last week. I kid you not, I'm a week behind on all my podcasts.
Yeah.
So, and I'm giving myself that, like, good. I don't have to catch up in 24 hours. But I just heard last week's podcast that Doug Peterson was in trouble.
Yeah.
And I guess he is.
What a segue, ladies and gentlemen, give it up.
Aaron, what is the mic you have, by the way? What is the mic you use?
Oh, it is a TK GOU. It's an M, I think it's like an M83 or something.
It sounds good.
Great. Well, I'm glad. I got this, you know, obviously, like, when the pandemic started, I was just like, okay, well, I guess I'm recording my podcast from home. But I got, and then these headphones a company sent me, and I can't, let me look at this one. AKG.
Okay.
So I'll plug them too. But nice. So Doug EP, I don't agree with it. I'm really pissed about it. But change the subject.
We could talk about my Dodgers winning the World Series.
Yeah, okay. Also,
we haven't talked since that.
No, I was going to say, all of LA, just within weeks, like, we just won everything. And I was just like, the fireworks will never end. Like, they finally somehow ended. And then, you know, I feel like we're going to be ramping up for the 4th of July before we know it. And it's just, it was... this is what I love. I love LA so much. You know, I think it's just such a, I'm like, of course LA won all of these things when we can't do anything to celebrate it.
Right.
Did that hold my neighbors from stopping, having a mariachi band come over? No, but like, good for them. You know, like, I was just like, all right, I guess we're going to do this. Guess we got the mariachi band blasting at 11:30 at night. Good for them. Find joy where you can.
when they won the World Series, we opened the windows just so we could hear a little bit of it. Not the mariachis, just the fireworks.
No. Yeah, no, it was, I'm over in like Northeast LA. And so this is what's kind of embarrassing. And, you know that I'm like a big sports person, but truthfully, the last year, I really fell off. Like, the pandemic has, I have not cared less about sports. And so what was so funny, like, you know, when the Dodgers won the World Series, you know, restaurants and breweries were open. And so my friend Dan and I went to go talk about my dating anxiety, because I was dating this guy, and hello, back to anxiety. But That was the whole point, that we went to this like German beer garden that was like all outdoors and like super great. And I got like one of those huge, huge, huge tall glasses.
Right. Yeah.
Beer for like $4. Like, great. And everybody, I didn't even realize the Dodgers game was on. Me and Dan are deep in conversation. I'm telling him all my insecurities, as I do with my friend Dan. Dan is a true treasure and joy. And if you ever need someone to sit in the trenches with you and be sad, he will. This is a true story. Hold on, to pivot real quick. One time, I told the story the other day. Dan is like such an emotional being, my friend, that one time, it was a couple years ago, he turned 30 years old. I was also going through a breakup. I bring him out to dinner. We're sitting at Cafe Birdie in Highland Park, and he goes, "How are you?" And I like faltered for a second, and then I burst into tears. I was like, oh, "I'm sorry, it's your birthday, and I'm crying. I'm so depressed." And he goes, "No." His eyes get so big. He goes, "No. Oh no, this is a gift to me. Let me sit in the trenches with you emotionally. This is the best birthday gift you could have ever given me." Like, he was so pumped to just be like, yeah, he's like, "Alex, I am," like, he talks about it openly, but he's "Let me get in there with you." And I was just like, who else would be like, "Yes, a birthday gift, me crying, congrats." Right, so we're sitting there, and I'm, you know, unloading on him as I do. And then all of a sudden everyone around us is like losing their minds. And I go, "Did we just like, I guess we won the game." And then I was like, "Oh wait, did we win the whole World Series?" And I was not a clue, not a clue. I was just so self-absorbed in my own shit that I didn't even realize that the Dodgers had won the World Series. So that's how out of touch I have been.
Well, I honestly think the Dodgers in that playoff run in the World Series are actually what kept my wife alive for as long as she was, because she was there for every game from like July on.
Stop.
Because it was every day.
Yeah.
It was every day, and you know, we were able to watch it. I'm not going to tell you exactly how we were able to watch every game, because of course they're not always on our televisions, but that's another story. And we watched every game to the point where that come from behind series win to get them to the World Series, she sat on the couch, or she sat on in a gray chair that we have in the living room. And then they won. And then they won the next one. And then they won the next one. All while she's sitting there, I said, "You need to sit there every game." Go back to Silver Linings Playbook. She didn't need to hold a remote the same way at the same angle every time. But nonetheless. And that brought her joy. That honestly, none of us had ever seen before in her when it came to sports. She was a sports fan. But not every day. She was talking to me about war and average and stats that I had never. She was on Dodgers Twitter scrolling because she couldn't sleep. She had insomnia, and it really. But here's the thing: there are no other sports that I'm interested in.
Really,
I've not. I mean, I would always watch basketball. Would always watch football. Would always watch baseball. But since the pandemic, I forget it's Sunday. So how am I supposed to look forward to the NFL if I don't even know what day it is?
Listen, I never put that together, but you are absolutely right. Like, you are absolutely right. And it's like, also, I feel so conflicted because I'm like, why is this even happening? Like, why are they even playing? And it's just like, all of it is just, it's not good. And so it's just like, and then, you know, especially in baseball, it was like, okay, well, this game got canceled because the entire team got COVID. And I was like, It was like, okay, why? Like, why are we doing this? You know? And so it just was, I felt so exhausted by it. And you know what? I think like one of the joys, especially for being from the Philadelphia area, is like, yeah, like, of course I watch games by myself, but there's such a great community aspect to it. And like, one of the things that I loved about watching my Eagles play in LA was going to the Greyhound in Highland Park, which was an Eagles bar, meeting other Eagles fans, meeting other people from Philadelphia, you know, cheering them on together, having that sense of community. And we can't do that right now. So it was just, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, when we all get vaccinated, Lord, like, give me the vaccine soon, please. Shoot it in my eye. I don't care. I do not care. Give it to me. So I could go do things like that again.
It would be really interesting to see when life gets back to quote normal, if there really is such a thing.
I think it's going to be changed, but I am hopeful. You know, what's infuriating, going on TikTok and seeing the countries that are COVID free, like New Zealand, Australia has really, like, they're not COVID free officially, but
tiny
bit. It is. Here's a pivot for you. It makes me so angry that I can see girls my age approaching 31 or younger in bars singing Taylor Swift's Folklore at the top of their lungs without masks on because they've gotten rid of this goddamn disease. And I have been robbed of that. That's all I'm going to say. Okay?
You brought up social media. Tell everybody where they can find you on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, anywhere else.
Well, now that I'm accidentally TikTok viral, I gave a relationship advice, which is so ironic.
Oh, yes. And by the way, yeah. Oh, I meant to. Thank you. In the intro, am I now contractually obligated to call you a viral TikTok star?
Yeah, no, I think so.
Okay. All right. Now, am I allowed to call it the talk?
The talk?
Yeah. You know,
talk?
Can I call it the talk? Okay.
No, you cannot. All right.
Are you viral on TT?
No, you can't say that either.
Okay. Are you a TikToker?
I guess so. I guess we
okay.
can call
all right,
that.
All right. All right. Fine.
A TikToker.
Fine. So I'm contractually obligated to call you.
Yes. A TikTok.
A viral TikToker. Okay.
Yeah. I am on TikTok. On Instagram, Twitter, Alex on the mic, ALEX on the MIC. And yes, you can listen to my podcast. And what's great about those episodes is they're evergreen. And so you can, you know, it's not like something will be dated. In fact, if you would like to, you know, go back and listen from the beginning, I'm sure it will be, I try to give life updates. And so it's funny. I've had people like binge my podcast and kind of go through ups and downs of my relationships, of me losing my job and all these things, but they are topical. Alex tries her best, and you can listen to that wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right. Let's try to toast. Let's try to cheers. Are you done with your bourbon?
Oh, I've been done for 30 minutes.
Oh, like, my gosh. I didn't even notice. Oh, that's so sad. You should have stopped the podcast and said, I need to get more.
Yeah, another thing that's been bad out of this pandemic, my tolerance has gone way up, and I can house liquor.
Cheers.
Well, cheers to that. Clink.
I don't know if this is actually making a noise. Hold on. I can do this. Ready?
Yep.
No, I can't do that.
Here. You don't have the nails that I have.
Yes. Hold on. I'm going to make this sound whether... And I'm not going to use like a canned sound effect. I'm going to use the metal part of this this plug. Ready? Hold on. No, that's so sad. It's so ridiculous. I can't do it.
Awesome.
Okay.
You know what?
Alex,
you did your best.
Love you. Thank you.
Love you. This was amazing. You're the best. I'll probably text you in about 15 seconds.
All kinds of contact info in the show notes. Alex is at Alex on the Mic on all her social media. You can get to all of my social media by going to aaronbender.com. Please subscribe to the podcast, rate, review, share. If you have guest ideas or comments, email me, aaronbendermedia@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Be well.